All right. Good morning and welcome to our Plenty You Can Trust podcast presented by Chatterton & Associates. I am your host, Shauna. I'm a part of the Plenty You Can Trust team. I'm here today with Eric O., one of our certified financial planners at Chatterton & Associates. Good afternoon, Eric.
Hey, Shauna. Good afternoon.
Good to see you.
Happy to be here.
So I'm not sure if there's an exact science to how we proactively prepare for volatile or uncertain markets, but I'm hoping you can help guide us through some planning opportunities that might benefit us all in the long run. So before we dive in, can you quickly explain to us the difference between a bear market and a market correction?
Sure, of course. So typical correction is defined as any market decline that is 10% or more from top to bottom. And these types of corrections can happen more often than not. Usually every 24 months or so, we see a correction of some sort. And that's certainly been the case for the last couple of years, and really all throughout the recovery that started in 2009. Bear markets, on the other hand, are corrections, but they're more severe. They're usually characterized with accelerated selling and panic in the market. And so you can see steep declines in it. And a textbook definition of a bear market, some may say, is a decline of more than 20%. But that's only one barometer of defining a bear market. Usually bear markets can decline by 20% or more, but it can also be defined as a market that continues to decline for a subsequent quarter after quarter. So depending on how you look at it, you know, bear markets, though, usually are a little bit harder to get through because of the panic and the emotion that's involved in the market and the volatility that comes along with it.
Right. So I have a lot to learn. I did a little research before today, and I was just kind of getting up to date, and I saw that on August 22nd, we actually celebrated our 3,453rd day of a strong bull market.
Yes, absolutely. So we are now in the longest running bull market that we have seen in history. And that's one aspect of looking at it. So this is, in terms of time, this is certainly the longest running bull market that we've seen going back to the Great Depression.
It's amazing.
So we're now in the 114th month of this recovery. The longest running bull market prior to this was the bull market that started in October of 1990, and that market had gone for 113 months. And it ended in March of 2000 with the Y2K bubble, when technology stocks got a little out of hand and valuations were extremely high.
So how do we look for specific indicators when we're trying to speculate, if you can speculate, which way the stock market will go?
Well, being that the economy is changing at such a vast pace, and you know, if you look at the economy 20 years ago versus today, you know, there's been quite a few changes in our economy. And as time has gone on, certainly over the last 50 years, we've seen our economy shifting away from a manufacturing base more to a service-based economy. And, you know, we are trying to bring some of that manufacturing back, but the reality is that our economy is moving more and more towards a service-based economy. And we certainly haven't, we certainly didn't even know who a Uber was 20 years ago. Really, in the last 5 years or so is when we found out about Uber. And, you know, Amazon was just in its infancy at that time. So, you know, the economy really has shifted gears here. And trying to compare economies from today versus 20 years ago may not necessarily be an apples to apples comparison, but there are certain barometers that we would look at as indicators, such as long-term fundamentals. And there's other things that we would watch on a quarter by quarter basis, such as interest rate policies and the liquidity in the markets with Federal Reserve monetary policies and so forth.
So I know you wrote a blog on this also, but what is your take on the China and US trade war? And what should us as investors be cautious of when looking at investments? Just to add a layer, you kind of touched on it.
So you must be trying to ask me a trick question at the moment, but this is certainly a tricky question. I wouldn't say it's a trick question, but it certainly is something that we're watching as it unfolds. It's it's very difficult to know what the overall outcome is going to be. You know, it started off with a smaller quantity of basket of goods, and now it's moving on to a larger basket of goods. The next round of tariffs is supposed to be on roughly $200 billion worth of goods. That's almost half of what we import from China. So this will certainly have a more meaningful impact on the market, but it's hard to know in the short term exactly what would happen here. One prediction is that costs would go up temporarily. You know, until companies can figure out different ways to reroute their supply chains or pass on the cost to their customer base, we believe that this would cause some short-term disruptions in the upcoming quarters. But we wouldn't necessarily see the data showing up in our economic data at least for another 3 to 6 months.
Okay.
Now, going back to one of your questions, talking about specific indicators,
right.
You know, like I said, looking at the economy 20 years ago versus today may not be the most relevant, but some of the things that we look at over the long term are, where does consumer confidence stand? Right now, it's at a very high point. The economy is doing really well. Unemployment is at historically low levels. It's expected to go lower in 2019. Corporate earnings are at very high records right now, and it's supposed to hit all-time highs again by the end of this year, and also in 2019 also. So we're thinking, what can go wrong with this market, right? But the reality here is that we're now in uncharted territory. We're in the longest running bull market that we've seen. So some of the things that we think can be working against this market as we go into the future are interest rate policies, depending on how the Fed has to react to these trade disputes. If short-term costs are rising faster, they may be forced to move a little bit quicker with interest rates. On the other hand, if economic activity starts to slow down because of it, they may hold off on interest rate increases. So it really is going to be something that we're going to have to watch as it unfolds over time.
Right. We never know. So obviously, when we do see these little corrections, but if we were to see a bigger drop in the market, or you've been through some of these times.
Sure.
I wasn't here for 2008, 2009
right.
to experience it on this side with you.
Right.
But you've seen things change. And what is the most common mistake you see people make during that time as the shifts happen?
So although all bear markets are a bit different from each other, and to give you an example, if we look at the last three bear markets that we went through, the last one being the global financial crisis, which was really exacerbated with the collapse of Lehman Brothers. That bear market was the most severe drop in the market that we have seen since the Great Depression, losing almost 60% from top to bottom, but it only lasted about 17 months. The bear market before that was in March of 2000, and this was the longest running bull market that we had seen prior to the current one that we're in right now. Ended with the Y2K bubble, and you know, valuations were extremely stretched at that time. And although the recession was not that long from an economic standpoint, the market took roughly 30 months to correct.
Wow.
So it was 30 months of continuing declines, and that market lost about 49% from top to bottom. This is according to JP Morgan Guide to the Markets. And the crash before that, which was in 1987, this crash was a drop of about 34%, but it only lasted for about 3 months.
Mm-hmm.
So it was a very swift turnaround.
Right.
So that being said, you know, every bear market is a little bit different, but there are characteristics of investors that are very similar from bear market to bear market. And that's usually investors that are being complacent. And then there's also panic that sets in.
Yes.
And then at the wrong time, they're selling.
Right.
So initially, it's a matter of kind of disbelief. And then, you know, as things get worse, the panic really kicks in. And then as the bottom starts to shape up, that's really when investors should be looking to buy assets, but they're doing the reverse and they're selling assets at that time.
Right. Yeah. It's hard not to panic. Yeah.
I certainly have personal memories of March of 2009 when that was happening.
Yeah.
And it seemed like yesterday.
Yeah. Yeah. It's tough to see the opportunities when you're kind of stuck in the panic, right?
Right. And contrary to that, the market that we're in today, you know, is kind of a state of euphoria. there are certain concerns, but then when you look at all the economic data, as I mentioned, the unemployment rate being at historic lows, housing has continued to rise, and wages are going up, consumer confidence is high. It's almost like nothing can go wrong, but I can tell you that almost every single bear market ends with euphoria, not with pessimism.
Right.
So.
Oh, yeah. So hold on.
Yeah,
so,
exactly.
Is that really the message? Hold on.
You know, as far as buy and hold goes, I think that buy and hold gives you the best chance at, you know, having market-like gains in the long term. It's a little bit easier said than done.
Of course.
Buy and hold doesn't necessarily mean that you have to buy it and hold it forever, though. There can be strategically placed trades that will help rebalance the portfolio over time, either for taking profits or for tax purposes. So those are the things that we really look for as opportunities. And, you know, as markets get volatile, those opportunities will start to rise.
Right. Well, that is definitely a good way to look at it. So, as you said, tax planning is so closely related to financial planning and the work you do every day and what you talk about in our seminars and in what you write. So what are some of those like tax planning opportunities that you like to share and that come up a
lot?
So
the first thing that comes to mind is that as the market goes into a bear market, a lot of times investors, if we look close enough in the portfolio, we can typically find assets that have declined since their purchase date. And that would create an opportunity for us to harvest those losses. And therefore, we can sell those investments, look for a similar type of investment that could still allow the investor to participate in the market if there is a recovery, but replace it with that similar replacement, but harvest those losses for tax purposes. And we can use those capital losses to either offset future capital gains from future sales of either a property or stock or mutual funds, or we can use that to offset ordinary income by $3,000 per year until those losses have been used up. So that's one avenue that we look at. Another avenue that we've looked at and that we have used extensively in the past are Roth conversions. And I can tell you that in 2009, our firm was doing Roth conversions on a regular basis. And at the time, clients looked at us like we were absolutely nuts. They were saying, you know, my portfolio is down right now at the moment, and you're asking me to pay more in taxes today. And it's a very difficult pill to swallow. But in the long run, we've certainly seen that pay off for a lot of investors that would have done that as part of their tax planning. Because the idea here is that while your investments are down, we would be converting those investments over to a Roth IRA from a traditional IRA. You would owe income tax on the portion that you convert, but the future growth will be completely tax-free as long as it stays in there for 5 years.
Right.
And so just imagine a company like Apple or Amazon or Google, if you converted that over to a Roth IRA at that time, you would have seen handsome profits since then, and that would have all been tax-free. So those are some ideas that we look at from a tax planning opportunity.
Wow, very cool. Big picture stuff. I love it. I know my big takeaway from today, and that's probably that you and I should have a little discussion offline about some things.
Sure.
Maybe you could help me out. But what would you like for listeners to take away from this podcast today? Like, what's the one big thing you're hoping for?
It's so easy for us to become overly optimistic or overly pessimistic at times and forget about what our long-term goals are. And that's why I think that it's so important that we as individual investors and also advisors continue to monitor the progress, continue to remind ourselves what the long-term objectives are. And that is usually by doing the quarterly meetings that we do, looking to rebalance the portfolio when we see opportunities, looking to search for dividends and yield when the growth doesn't seem like it's there, but also looking to protect or move to more conservative positions during times of volatility or when we think that the risk reward is not there. So those are the things that we continue to look for. Nobody has a crystal ball, Nobody can do this perfectly, but I think with a long-term goal and objective, and usually by setting out a well-written investment policy statement, that it gives us a much higher probability of achieving those targets versus trying to do this ad hoc.
Yeah. Well, I love it. I love to learn from you and talk to you. So thank you so much for being here today. And I'm sure we'll be doing it again soon.
It's a pleasure.